Welcome to Community Forum. I'm Ellen Lockyer. Anchorage voters are facing a runoff election for city mayor on May 5th. That's less than 2 weeks away. So my in-studio guests today, my in-studio guest today is candidate Eric Croft.
Good afternoon. Great to be here.
And candidate Dan Sullivan promises to be joining us by phone. He's flitting from one engagement to another, but he says he'll be calling in. So let's just say that both candidates have a strong background in community service. Eric was a municipal prosecutor and represented Midtown Anchorage in the State House starting in, 1997?
Yeah.
And how do you think that prepared you for your bid for city mayor?
I think you see a lot of the same challenges. You have to put together coalitions. You have to convince people in across the aisle to join in with your ideas. You have to build budgets, and you have to solve problems. And that's what I liked most about representing Midtown, the legislature, serving the legislature. I spent 6 years on the finance committee. It's really about real solutions. And when we're doing our best, we're not thinking as Democrats or Republicans. We're thinking about how we get things done. And it's what I'm most excited about as mayor, solving problems, bringing the parties together and figuring out how we can make things work better.
Right. So the mayor's race, though, is nonpartisan.
Right.
Right. And but you are.
Well, and I think that, but that experience, right?
A
Democrat in the legislature, working in the minority, as I did all 10 years, you really had to, get a significant amount of Republican buy-in to get anything passed, of course. And it really, when we're at our best, you're working not as a Democrat or Republican, you're working in a nonpartisan way. We passed a lot of legislation. I did as a legislator, and to do that, you have to do your work and cross party lines. So I think it's good practice for this. In addition, almost every issue we deal with at the city, from dog parks to reimbursement of school bonds, has a state component to it. The state is very involved because of the way we've set up. We don't have counties. It's really local government and state government are very involved, from where we're going to get more alcohol treatment to how we run our pension system.
Right. And it's all related now under our governmental system. Let me just interject this. Mr. Dan Sullivan he spent 9 years on the Anchorage Municipal Assembly representing West Anchorage, and he has served 6 years on the Board of Alaska Natural Gas Development Authority. And while we are discussing calling in, this is a call-in show. So if you're listening, if you have questions for our candidates, call 550-8433-550-8433. Or 1-888-353-5752 outside of Anchorage, or email us at communityforum@kska.org. So Eric Croft is one of our candidates for the mayoral runoff election on May 5th. He's sitting in our studio right here. And Eric, in your view, I mean, what's the biggest question facing Anchorage?
I think the biggest challenge for the next mayor is how we deal with the challenging economic times that we have, and how we do it maintaining our quality of life without imposing a whole new tax on Anchorage or increasing the tax burden. I want to get very targeted tax property tax relief, targeted on the middle class, and so we've got to come forward with ideas of how we can find cost savings. This is going to be a period where we, like Anchorage families, have to tighten our belt, have to identify waste in the city government or efficiencies. And I want to focus that property tax relief, as I said, on the middle class. And I think that's where you're going to see a lot of the action over the next 2 weeks on the different plans to do that. Dan has put forward a sales tax proposal, one that would completely fund government off sales taxes. I think that would be unstable, and we're seeing a lot of states that, because they rely too heavily on a sales tax, their budgets go down way too fast in economic downturns. But also, I think it'd be unfair. It shifts a lot of the tax burden onto middle-class families and away from big outside landowners.
When you say middle-class tax reduction, can you embroider on that a little bit?
Well, we want the tax relief to go to homeowners, and we want it to be focused in on the middle and upper middle incomes. You do that by increasing the exemption on every home, and it's we as a municipality, overwhelmingly voted to put in a $20,000 exemption on everyone's home. That was very popular. In fact, Dan Sullivan was the only one to vote against it on the assembly, and then it passed overwhelmingly. And I think what we need to do is a little more of that. In this hard economic times, we bring property tax relief by extending the exemption on your home. And that focuses that property tax savings on the homeowners that I'm worried about in this economy.
You mentioned, and most of what I am going to discuss with you is right on your website, which is ericcroft.com. And you talk about the city assessor's office role. You mentioned that if people dispute their property evaluation, it is the assessor's office that makes the final decision. And you don't seem to think that's a great idea.
Well, here's what happened. We have a board of equalization that is supposed to be an independent review of the assessor, and they're nominated by the assembly. And that still exists. The problem is it's staffed by, folded under, picked by, the decision in your case is drafted by the assessor. And when you go to make that appeal, it doesn't feel like, nor do I think it works out to be, an independent and fair review. I think it's too associated with involved with the assessor's office. And here's why that's important. You know, the largest corporate landowners in our city can afford to take this to Superior Court. They can afford, because of the amount of money we're talking about, to have a court case about it. Most of us can't. When we're questioning our home evaluation, we've got the assessor's determination, and a court action really isn't a viable option for us. So in between, that's where it becomes really valuable to have that independent review. And I just think it's not independent enough. I think that the current Board of Equalization is trying. I think they're good people doing a good job, but I don't think it's the proper system, and it doesn't foster an independent look at it that every Anchorage resident, I think, deserves.
Right. Well, I have to say, from my experience, in 15 years, I contested my evaluation twice. Both times I won my case, but I think you have to pick your battles.
Maybe that's right. How long ago was it? When did you do that?
Oh, quite a few years ago, maybe 8-9 years ago, and then a couple of years before that. I did it twice.
In 2003, late 2003, early 2004 is when this change happened, and a lot of the changes were good, because there was a backlog at the Board of Equalization, but some of them, and in particular having the assessor staff and have so much involvement with the appeal, I think was an error.
Okay. Can you hold that thought? We'd like to go to the phones.
Sure.
There's a couple of calls. Let's go to line two. Patricia has a question about sales tax. Hi, Patricia.
Hi. I'm afraid that my question is kind of mute, but I have heard an awful lot on the television from Eric Croft in his advertisements about what Dan Sullivan would do. I'm not quite clear about what he would do. I mean, is he in favor of maybe a 3% sales tax in the summer, or what are his views?
I think a sales tax, I'm against a sales tax, because it hurts working families. It shifts that burden. If you use, and let's be clear for your listeners, Ellen, because sometimes people come up to me and say, well, I'd like a sales tax for better road repair or more police protection or to give to light rail. This is a zero-sum game that's being proposed. It's sales tax to offset property taxes, solely to provide property tax relief. So one of the first things that's a problem with it is when you do, you've got to let go some police or fire or snowplowers because you got to hire tax collectors. You're the people who are going to be getting your property taxes are not the same as getting your sales. So it's already reducing services. But more importantly, it shifts the burden of the taxation onto working families, people with children, seniors. Those are the ones who lose in this operation. And the biggest winners are those outside interests that have huge landowners in this state. You get a big cut on your property taxes there, and they don't buy much at Fred Meyer's or Carr's. So I object to the way it shifts the tax burden downward onto working families.
Okay, but most working families in this town own a home, or they rent and pay sales tax through their rent. So wouldn't it filter down to us too?
Well, that's exactly right. You don't get anywhere near what you're losing every time you go to the store and buy milk or bread or a television than you saved on your property taxes. The people that make out very well, the entities that make out very well, are the biggest buildings on our skyline, the biggest entities, because they're not buying things and they get the property tax deduction. We get a little property tax relief and a whole lot of burden every time we go to the store. So people with children, seniors who get a senior property tax exemption but would get no sales tax exemption. So every time they buy anything, they're paying and subsidizing. It's a great transfer of money to big landowners. And I want to do just the opposite. I want to give working families, those homeowners, an exemption on their property tax. And when you do that, you do the opposite. You give them relief.
Right. So where is the money going to come from?
Well, that's...
I'm not naive as much as to think that the taxes are not necessary. We need to keep the city going, and it looks as though the prices are going up everywhere for our services. So where's the money going to come from if you cut our property taxes?
That's exactly right. The sales tax is just a shift, too. What we're talking about is here is where the burden's gonna lie. You got to go to a break. Okay. She's doing strange signals. I'm sorry, Patricia, but I'll
radio
keep talking.
Signals.
They're doing semaphores and things. Passed a tax cap, Prop 9, that I was a supporter of. That's going to force some savings. I've talked about ways that we save money. And the question becomes, with those savings, when you implement those savings, who's going to get them? Rather than implementing a whole new sales tax on an economy that's very fragile, I think we should do better with our money, find those efficiencies, and just make sure that the savings that we do get down to the right people.
Okay, Patricia, we've got quite a few calls holding. Thank you for calling in.
Okay.
Thanks
a
lot.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Let's go to line 6, Robert.
Hi.
Hi, Robert. You there? Yeah. Thanks for being patient.
Yeah. Some of my question also on a sales tax was answered with the last call. I do have a more specific question about a sales tax, and I wish Mr. Sullivan was on the line to hear this. Basically, what I've heard is that replacing property taxes with a sales tax would force us to impose the biggest sales tax in the country, something in the realm of 10 to 14%. And Mr. Sullivan has said, well, it's no problem because, 60% of the voters would have to approve that, which voters won't do. So I'm just curious, for Mr. Sullivan, if he's admitting that his only real proposal in this race isn't actually going to happen, what kind of a plan for taxation does he actually have? If Mr. Croft would like to comment on that, that'd be fine.
Well, let me just say we are hoping Mr. Sullivan will call in. He has our text direct line, so he's hoping to. So go ahead, Eric, to answer that.
Part of the frustration, and Robert hit on it, is I've been very specific about ways I think we can find efficiencies and talked about those, and specific about what I'd like to do on giving homeowners a property tax exemption. Dan said for a long time that he wanted a sales tax, and despite the fact that Anchorage voters had rejected it over and over, he wanted a sales tax. It wouldn't add any new services. It'd just deduct from property taxes. And so when he came out with his proposal to completely replace the property tax, the only proposal we had is the most recent one he supported, the 2006 one that he voted to put on the ballot. If you use that sales tax, which he, as I said, he supported, then you would need a 14% rate on that to replace property taxes. That would be by far the biggest in the nation. It would kill not only working families that we've been talking about, but a lot of small businesses. And he said, no, I'm not talking about that, but I won't tell you which I am. And so if this is his plan, I think it's incumbent on him to tell us what he's proposing besides the one he put on the ballot in 2006. It's one of these whack-a-mole things I keep chasing around.
And I might have missed that. I mean, you're obviously more plugged into this than I am. Has he said anything with regard to what he would do if he proposes a sales tax and voters don't want it? Is he saying, I'd like to do this giant different thing unless I just do exactly what we're doing right now? Because it's kind of what it sounds like.
No, and I agree with you. It's a frustration if he says, well, the voters would stop me from this very radical proposal that wouldn't make any sense. I mean, when we say it doesn't make any sense, well, don't worry, they'll stop me. Well, then who needs just theoretical property tax relief? If it ain't going to happen, it's not going to make much difference.
Okay. Well, thanks a bunch, and hopefully Mr. Sullivan can respond to that. It's unfortunate he wasn't able to actually be on the show.
Thank you.
I see that we have Dan Sullivan on the line.
Yes, I'm calling in.
Hey, Dan Sullivan, welcome to Community Forum. Eric Croft is here, and we have quite a few people lining up to ask you about the sales tax. So could you give us your position?
Oh, absolutely. You know, the Assembly over the years has considered ways to achieve property tax relief, and looking at new revenues is always an option. Certainly, my number one goal in getting property tax relief is to control the growth of city spending. So that's got to be job number one. Get in there, find efficiencies, make sure that if there's areas of the city government that could be better done by the private sector, you put those out to competitive bid. Cities have found all sorts of innovative ways to deliver good services and do it at less cost, and that's got to be the first focus. But in terms of new revenues, Eric has continually misrepresented my position on sales tax, and so I'm glad I have the opportunity to kind of straighten the record. In 2005, Dan Coffey put together a proposal for a fairly minor sales tax. It would be 3%. It would just be on goods and not services. It had a zillion exemptions, and it didn't raise very much money. The Assembly said, okay, let's see what the public thinks about that. So we voted to put it on the ballot, and the public, you know, rejected it soundly. So to suggest that you would just multiply that proposal by some factor of four or more and say that's the proposal to eliminate property tax is just silly. It's ridiculous. And I guess, you know, Eric must feel that if you just repeat a lie often enough, somehow it becomes reality, because I have never proposed a tax at that level and never would. Here's how you get a sales tax properly discussed before the public, and if you're going to put anything on the ballot, you do this first. And keep in mind, folks, that no mayor can just implement a sales tax. It has to be a 60% vote of the people. If you're going to put something out there with a 60% vote of the people as mayor, I would engage this community in a year-long or however long discussion it takes and involve the retailers that have to collect it, landlords, renters, chambers of commerce, community councils, all interested groups to find out what does the public want? What's their goal with property tax relief? Do they want an additional revenue source? Do they want the visitors and the commuters and the seasonal workers to contribute to the revenue base because they use our service? And that's how you put forth a plan. I've put forth no plan now, but the one thing I have said is I think the public right now is so distrustful of their city government and government at all levels, I don't think they want two taxes right now. And that's why you have to engage in that community discussion. Rebuild the trust through some good budgeting over the next year or two. Show them that you can rebuild their confidence in government, and then you can have a reasonable discussion and maybe a reasonable plan. But up until that time, boy, I'm sensing out there they don't want two attacks wallet. So that's my position on it. There's no set plan. There's an idea that we should engage the community and come up with a plan.
Do you want to respond to that, Eric?
Well, I do. If we can't look anywhere to find your sales tax plan, because you talked about it, Dan, as a sales tax replacing property tax.
Eric,
I go to find that?
Well, I mean,
that was the best non-answer I've ever heard.
Yeah. Eric, I think I just explained to you that what I heard on the campaign trail, and I explained to the listeners that what I have heard from the public is that the only sales tax that they would accept right now is one that totally replaced property tax because they don't trust their government with two taxes. I don't have a plan. I was reflecting what I'm hearing from the public, and that's what a good public servant does. A good public servant listens to the constituents, takes a thoughtful approach, and then comes forward with a plan after you've engaged in a community-wide discussion about how to properly implement such a plan. So that's my position. You've been trying to distort it by putting out some 14% number that you know I have never mentioned. If you can find anywhere in print or in statement that I've said I would support a 14% sales tax, I'll eat that piece of paper.
You know what? I know it does, because what you said is you put before the voters in 2006 the exact sales tax you're talking about. It replaced about a quarter and had a 3% price tag on it. And then you said you wanted to replace the entire amount.
Yeah,
I asked
you would use that formula. You would use that formula for a total replacement. There's a dozen kinds
what
of sales
would you
tax
use?
Formulas, Eric.
Don't you think the people of this city deserve an answer?
We put the coffee plan out there so that the voters could have a chance to say, do you want a small sales tax or not? What did they say? They said no. So why would you possibly use that same formula in trying to develop a sales tax that replaced property tax. You wouldn't. Eric, it's a red herring. It's a scare tactic. You know that I don't have a 14% plan. And if you keep repeating it over and over, you're just misleading the public and you know it.
No, you know that that's the only thing we're going until you give us something. What do you got, Dan?
Okay, let's...
Well, I told you how I'm going to develop my plan, Eric, and apparently you just refuse to listen. But hopefully your viewers and your listeners do out there in the media world. And I think on May 5th, you're going to find out that they did listen.
I hope they do.
Well, let's hear from a couple of those voters. Gordon on line one has been holding quite a while. Gordon, hello.
Hello. Thank you for the opportunity.
Yeah, what's your question?
Well, I guess it's sort of evolved now that the discussion in there. I think a lot of other people thought that Dan Sullivan was going to come out with a plan to replace the property tax. I'm a property owner by use of the sales tax. And what I hear him saying is he has no plan except that he's going to talk and engage the voters. I mean, and what's the timeline on that? I mean, either when you come up with a plan, you have a proposal what you can do when you're going to come into government to do something, not just. This is not a study research project. This is an executive who carries it out. So I guess my question is, what would you do in the meantime? And the second question would be this, something that's come up, is that I understand, Dan Sullivan, that you're against public employees having a defined benefit, or in other words, a pension program. That I was wondering if it's not just, is it just city government workers?
Right, well, let's stick with one question at a time because we're focused on one issue here, and I want to make sure the public's very clear on it. The first thing you do is you listen to your constituents and you try and formulate a plan that you think that they will adopt at the ballot box. A sales tax takes a 60% vote. I want to develop a plan that has an opportunity to get the vote if the community decides that they do indeed want to replace property tax with new revenue sources. That's the thoughtful, good public policy way to develop a plan. So that's exactly what I'm going to do, and I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a better way to develop public policy. The mayor can't implement a plan or implement a sales tax. It takes the voters, and why not engage the voters in helping develop that plan? It makes perfect sense.
So what's your timeline to implement, to actually have a sales tax? How long would it take? Because you're going to be taking over, you take over, in a month. So how long will it take you to get your change in your tax?
The new mayor takes over July 1st. I will take as long as it takes till I feel there's consensus out there in the community. Because, you know, when the past sales taxes were put out there, the sponsors of it, like, for example, when, you know, a coffee plant or when Begich proposed a sales tax back in the mid-90s, there was really no advocacy behind it, and that's why they failed. So you don't put something out there until you've developed a broad consensus. I mentioned the chambers of commerce, the community councils, the retailers that have to collect the tax, renters, landlords. All affected groups need to have a say in this decision. And so you take as long as it takes. It might take a year. But it's better to take a year and get something done right than try and force something through and just have it fail again.
Okay, did that answer your question, Gordon? We have other callers waiting. Eric, did you want to respond to Gordon's question?
Well, only that while he's doing that, we don't have any property tax relief. And that's the problem. He said, I've got a plan. It's going to you use a sales tax to give you property tax relief. And as he's been listening to voters, I've been listening too. They don't want a sales tax. We've said that three times, and I think the message would have gotten through. But the problem with this wait-and-see plan now is it doesn't deliver the property tax relief that middle-class families need.
So go ahead.
Let me respond to that. What I said at the start is exactly what I was referring to for real property tax relief. You do it by controlling the growth of city spending. I've got a record of having done that. I'm the guy that is known as the budget hawk on the assembly because I was the one who would scrutinize the budgets and make amendments to reduce unnecessary spending and to vote against budgets if they didn't reflect what I felt was good policy for the constituents that have to pay the taxes. That's how you get real property tax relief. In the meantime, you know, if you want to look at exemptions are a gimmicky way to give property tax relief. All you're doing is shifting the burden from one group to another, and with Eric's plan, it shifts it particularly to renters who are those among us who can least afford to pay an increase in rent. So, you know, exemptions are a gimmick. Real property tax relief comes from controlling city spending and engaging the community to look at new revenue sources. That's the plan.
The last exemption that we passed, the $20,000, where Dan Sullivan was the only vote against the conservative or liberal, the only vote against it on the assembly, and that passed overwhelmingly by the voters, delivered real property tax relief to exactly the kind of people that are most struggling now, is the those homeowners who may lose their house. And the majority of voters didn't think it was a gimmick, Dan, and the majority of the assembly didn't think it was a gimmick. In fact, you're the only one doing that.
That's exactly right, because, again, it shifted it to the business sector, including landlords, who increased their rent on those among us who can least afford to see an increase in rent. That's not real relief. I don't want property tax relief on the backs of the poor. I want property tax relief that's fair and even across the board. You shift it over to the small business community. Hey, those are working families, too. Who do you think owns small businesses? Who do you think works at small businesses? Anytime you shift the tax burden over to that sector, they don't expand their business. They don't hire that extra person. Maybe they lay somebody off. You don't get property tax relief through the shift and shaft. That just is not good public policy.
Okay, let's just take one more call on sale. Thank you, Dan. Let's take one more call from Clay. He's on line 7. He's been holding quite a while. He's going to keep this sales tax ball rolling. Clay, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hi. And I was policy and budget director and helped Mark Begich design his sales tax. And I've sort of been involved in taxation and revenue policy on and off for quite a while. And the last caller just sort of didn't seem to understand that you, with a 60% threshold, when do you ever get 60% on anything, you know? So it's like almost an impossible threshold to reach. So what Mr. Sullivan was mentioning about needing time to build community consensus for any tax change is something that whoever is elected mayor is going to have to do if they really do want to help provide property tax relief and efficiencies and wasteful government spending. My God, I mean, tell me one politician who doesn't say we're going to cut out wasteful government spending and find efficiencies. And yet, you know, either here in Anchorage or in the state or in the nation, when does that ever occur? I mean, it's sort of a platitude like loving your mother and your children. I mean, it's a good goal, but when it comes right down to it with all the vested interest groups, it very, very rarely produces any significant revenue. So I think the sales job on the sales tax is quite important. I had a couple of other thoughts because I talked with a number of people about Prop 9 and about during the course of the election earlier. But one of the things that is sort of a real burden that hasn't come up to the property tax owner is the bond issues. And when I lived in Juneau back in the 70s, when we wanted to build a school addition, we got voter support, and we would have a temporary, time-limited, revenue-limited sales tax. And so if we wanted to build a high school addition in Juneau, for example, we would figure out how long it would take with, say, a 2%, 3%, 5% sales tax to raise the money that it was estimated to require to build that high school addition. So what I'm wondering is how the two gentlemen might feel about substituting. Yeah, we could still have the 60% threshold, but if people wanted school improvements, then they would have to vote for a school improvement bond issue sales tax that would require a 60% voter approval instead of just tacking it on constantly to the property tax burden. I was wondering what people might think about that.
Do you want to answer that, Dan, or go for it?
Sure, absolutely. Well, you know, it's interesting that Juneau, which is, you know, considered a very progressive city, doesn't seem to think a sales tax is so evil. In fact, they use it as, you know, an integral part of their revenue collection because they're wise enough to know that it's a broad-based tax that includes tourists and seasonal workers and, you know, other folks that visit their community from other communities in Alaska. So it is an effective tool. And to use it on a case-by-case basis has been used successfully in other places. Wasilla, for example, built their sports complex out there with a slight increase in their sales tax. And people should keep in mind, you know, Wasilla is an example of a city that right now is collecting no property tax because their sales tax, which is only 2 or 2.5% or so, has produced so much revenue that they've been able to put their mill rate down to zero. So it can be done. It doesn't have to be extreme, and the example of using it for special projects is worth considering.
You know, what, Dan, you brought that up on another radio show we were on, and the caller called back to say he called the Wasilla clerk, and while there are some areas that are zero, a lot have property tax and the sales tax, and that's a lot of the people I talked to is concerned with your plan, that they were going to end up with high degrees of both. Juneau, it may make sense to do this because I've been there when they're inundated with tourists. But the fact is, tourists would be, in our town, a very small portion of our sales tax. Who really pays it is the people who live here every day, and who wins on it is those big corporate outside landowners. That, I mean, when you were talking before, I was worried who you represented, the people of this city or those entities.
Well, and you could say the same thing about Eric's proposal for an income tax legislature. Who are you supporting? The people whose wallet you were going to reach into, grab money, and throw it at the big trough of big government? Come on. I mean, I'll compare my record of sticking up for the taxpayer with yours any day, Eric. Bottom line
I
is
think
that
you'll find it
a sales tax, in Wasilla, you got to remember, they're in the borough, and there is a borough property tax, but the city itself is what I was referring to.
I'm not sure it matters to people when it's being taken out of their wallet.
No, but the point is at least we have an example of a city that, through a selective sales tax, was effective in putting forth special projects, just like the gentleman mentioned. It's a tool that could be used. It's just, again, that's one of the things that you do in examining how do you want to put forth a new revenue measure. You engage your community. You find out, you know, exactly what they want. What will they accept? And we may not get the tourists that Juneau does, but we get 30,000 commuters a day from the valley. You total that up over a year, I think that'll match up with Juneau's tourism anytime.
What would you consider an alcohol tax?
You know, again, community discussion. Let's find out what they want. Let's see what the people want. It's a decision that has to be made by this community, not by any one politician.
Okay, Dan, there's a caller directing a question for you, one of the voters. Susan, let's go to line 9. Susan, are you there?
Yes, I am.
Hi, thanks for being patient.
Yeah, I have a question for Dan. I know that in the previous administration they struggled with the same issue, and I know that you've talked about it so far on the radio show. One of the things that they took a look at and formed a committee about was the concept called the gross receipts tax.
Sure.
And I think that people on the committee were like John Wanamaker and Bob Bell. It was a real bipartisan, trying to wrestle with what could they do to reduce property taxes by, say, a third. And anyone in the scenarios, it's hard to, you can juggle the numbers and it'll produce a different response. But knowing that you are intimately familiar with the city budget, where do you see that as a viable concept?
No, the gross receipts tax, it was a taxing mechanism used in the 30s, 40s, 50s, and pretty much abandoned by all modern governments because it's extremely regressive. You're taxing goods essentially every step down the chain as it moves from manufacturing to retail. And again, the analysis that was done, and the Chamber of Commerce did an analysis as well, and showed that was not a preferred method and something to be avoided, in fact. So,
I would guess that the Chamber struggled with this, business struggles with this, but it's tough direction one might go with any of these. And I do applaud the need to kind of listen to everybody and reevaluate this again as we move forward with new economic conditions.
Yep, you absolutely have to. This is not the time for quick, unilateral, unthoughtful decisions. It's time really to engage the community and find out where do we move forward from here if we really want to achieve true long-term property tax relief.
All right, thank you.
Thanks, Susan.
Thanks, Susan.
Other callers, if you have a question for Mr. Croft or Mr. Sullivan, 550-8433, 550-8433. Outside of Anchorage, 1-888-353-5752, or email us at communityforum@ksaa.org. And we have several other callers waiting, but I would like to move on a little bit to efficiencies rather than tax increases or reductions. Eric, some of your ideas on saving money in the city budget?
Right, and I think it's important that we put some of those ideas forward. And none of this is easy, but if you're thoughtful about it, if you do your homework, if you can make delve into it, you can find areas where we can be more efficient. I talked about from early on, we ran some TV ads talking about the duplication of service between the school district and the municipality and how we can save money there. You know, it's a lot like what we saw in this town for a long time between the city and state on snow plowing, where people, and I remember this from 20 years of people complaining about it, where the city would not plow the state's roads, the state would be driving a plow and not plowing the city's roads, and people would call and legitimately complain about it. Why this seems inefficient, and it was, and yet for that long it just couldn't get solved because of turf battles, because of jurisdiction, or whatever. We now have a much better system. We're able to, the city does a lot of the state's roads. Mark was able to get that resolved with Sarah, if you will. The two entities over the last couple of years were able to get it resolved. And now we have much more efficiencies, and it's led to freeing up some of those state snow plowers, and they are doing the sidewalks, which was another complaint that never happened on the state roads. So in the same way, I think we can see, though we've talked about this for a long time, we can finally crack that nut and get those efficiencies there so that we can save money.
And Mr. Sullivan, I have one for you. And you mentioned that the city's spending has grown 50% the past 5 years, and you say that the city services have not grown commensurately with the increase in taxes because most of the spending increases have gone to contracts, benefits, and wage increases for city employees. Can you comment on that and how you would change that?
Sure. You were correct in your opening statement there, 80% plus of the city budget is labor costs. So you really got a huge dent right away out of your budget when you sign contracts, a long-term contract that puts such a burden on the budget. That being said, we've got great public employees in all areas, and we've got some hard-working folks out there. And so I say that, they collectively bargained. They got what they bargained for. I wouldn't have supported the contracts that came out in December. I think they were too long term. And when you're going into a period of maybe zero or even deflationary period, probably not the right time to lock in guaranteed raises. And it angered the public. I mean, most people are about just keeping their job, yet less getting a guaranteed raise for the next 5 years. So they value our employees, but I think that was the wrong move. So looking at labor costs has to be part of any solution. So There's a couple mechanisms that other cities have done effectively to improve their performance while reducing costs. One is called performance-based government, and the Wirtz administration actually had implemented this and won a national award for it. And literally what you ask each department to do is to very clearly define what their goal is with the money they're getting, and then you have means and measures to determine whether or not they achieved that goal, and if not, ways that they could do it better, or if they did achieve it, how to recognize that and try to make that even better the next budget cycle. Too often in public policy, what happens is the only analysis of budget is done at the increase that departments are requesting. At $1 million last year, we won $1.2 million this year, justify the two, instead of justifying $1.2 million. So, performance-based government puts that analysis into place. Virtually every business does that. You don't just give a department in your business more money without them showing the results and quantifying what they did with the previous budget. So that's one mechanism. The other thing you look at is what's called managed competition, where you look at city services and you determine whether or not they can be put out to competitive bid with the private sector. And Indianapolis is the model of how this has worked. Mayor Goldsmith in Indianapolis in the mid to late 90s really was the founder of managed competition, if you will. And they looked at all sorts of city services, put them out competitive bid, and they found that they could deliver services more effectively and more cheaply by the competitive process. And oftentimes the public employees would actually win the bid because they get to participate in maintaining the provision of that service. And when they're put into a competitive situation, it's amazing how creative they get. They kind of remove the yoke of bureaucracy, if you will, and all of a sudden very energized and creative about being in a competitive situation and showing in their town that they can do it as effectively and as efficiently as any private company. So it really creates a dynamic of competition. And as we know in the business world, competition is a great thing. It makes you provide service, good product at an efficient price, or else you don't keep customers. So those are two proven methods that we're going to be looking at, we're going to be implementing, And I think it'll be important for future services in Anchorage.
I guess so. The next couple of years are going to sharpen everyone's creativity. We have the callers are still asking about taxes, though. So let's go to line 8. Craig, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hi, Craig. Thanks for waiting.
Sorry for bringing up property taxes again, but I kind of wanted to ask both candidates to have them explain to me at least how they think our property taxes. Unfair or oppressive. From my point of view, we own a modest home in East Anchorage here. And if you take into account what we got from the PFD this year, we not only didn't pay any property tax whatsoever, but we got an extra $4,000 out of it. I feel like sometimes when people say they don't like the property tax, they're actually saying it's a euphemism for we don't like to pay any taxes, we don't like to pay anything. And we have people on our street also, a retired couple, they don't pay anything. They have a modest income, and they don't pay any property taxes. So tell me how you think that a property tax paying what we do is unfair when I think it's just fine, because even if I did have to pay it totally with no PFD, I would have no problem doing that.
Eric, you want to take that first?
Sure. Let me tell you,
the way I see it is it's the rich people and people that own really expensive homes that can afford to pay more that are complaining more about property taxes. And the people that don't own expensive homes just don't realize they're being bamboozled into being against taxes for the benefit of the rich.
And I think that he's right in the sense that the sales taxes that Dan's talking about would benefit the very wealthiest and would hurt the baby I heard in the background there. I think we all understand that we have to pay for the services we get, and we all want a community that has good schools and good police protection and a great quality of life here. Dan and I have both talked about that on the campaign trail. So we need to pay for the society we live in. But I do want to deliver that property tax relief. The only real way we've gotten property tax relief over the last little bit has been extending the exemption. It's proven to be effective, and we can do it again. And the senior property tax exemption, I think, is appropriate. I'm a supporter of it. Dan has talked about making it needs-based, that is, seniors would have to show their paperwork in order to get it. I think that's unnecessary. It's already, to some extent, needs-based. If you have a $1 million home, you don't get much of that. And if you have a very modest home, you get a lot of it. I think our seniors deserve that.
Dan?
Well, let me respond. I haven't said anything about seniors' current exemption being needs-based. The question was asked whether or not we should expand the seniors' exemption. And I think because it shifts the burden over to people like renters, you have to take a hard look at that, and you don't just maybe put it out as a blanket exemption. Maybe you put some criteria into any expansion of it. But I've never said that I don't support the current disabled veteran and senior $170,000 exemption. So, again, you got to keep the record straight when you're talking about other people's positions. It's just too easy a trap to fall into, Eric. And now the rest of his question was whether or not property tax really is burdensome, onerous. And I think it really comes from the fact that it is the main source. It's over 50% of what is collected in revenues for funding city government. And I agree that we live in a modern, progressive city. It takes taxes to make this city run. If you don't want to pay taxes, you move up to Squintna or somewhere else out in rural Alaska. There's places you can go and avoid government and taxation if you want. But if you're going to live in Anchorage, Alaska, you're going to pay taxes. And so the real trick is to provide value for that tax. And again, I think that's where the disconnect is coming. And I agree with the guy, you guys should get your permanent fund. That's a nice chunk of change. It seems to take care of any property tax you might have had. But we all know in a couple of years that permanent fund will be very, very small because of what happened in the market this year. And the five-year average is going to hit us in a year or two. And so, if you think people are complaining about property tax now, wait till they don't get that permanent fund, but of $68 or whatever it's going to be. So that's why, again, a diversified portfolio, just like in your investments, probably makes sense for a city. And that's why you have a good discussion community-wide about what other sort of revenues you might look at. It's, where I see more of the property tax complaint is really from retired folks who maybe their home is paid off. And they're starting to see them literally paying more and more each month to a level where it actually is exceeding what they used to pay on their mortgage. And again, most people don't mind it if they see value, but take the school district, for example. We've got pretty good schools, but when you look at the dropout rate increasing and the graduation rate declining and test scores being mediocre at best, and a budget that almost doubled in 10 years from $400 million to nearly $800 million, people are starting to ask, what am I getting for my property tax? I don't mind paying it if I'm starting to see good, solid results out there. And I think that's where the disconnect comes. I don't think we're doing as good a job as we can providing the services that people want for their property tax.
Dan, you didn't say you wanted it needs-based in the ADN? You didn't
only
say
on any increase. Increase.
We would needs-base the increase or the whole thing?
If somebody proposed an increase in the $170,000 exemption for seniors and disabled veterans, I said we should look at whether or not it should be a needs-based. I didn't say it has to be. I said that's something we should consider because we're going to be shifting the tax burden over to other people. And you should look at all the parameters before you make a move like that.
I'll go back and look at the ADN. Okay.
Okay.
And of course, the ADN is the exact source of all things true and correct. So please do.
No, I meant your responses in the ADN, not what they published about it, but what you wrote about it.
Okay. No, they asked about increases.
I'll look. Okay.
Okay, let's go to Victor on line 3. Victor.
Hello.
Hi. What's your question?
Hi. I had one comment first, and that was the discussion about specific sales taxes that were levied to accomplish specific projects. And that has worked extremely well in many cities in the lower 48, such as Oklahoma City, when they wanted to put in their version of a river walk in downtown, they put on a one penny sales tax and paid for the entire thing without bonding it at all. And in San Antonio, for instance, you take a look at Seattle when they wanted to put a new stadium in, and they fought about it for 5 years over Paul Allen was going to pay for it or who was going to pay for it. In San Antonio, when they wanted to put in a new stadium, they tacked something onto the rental car rate. It didn't take but 1 year's worth of fighting over it, and they got it all paid for, and they moved forward. Other cities have done extremely well, and I think we need to look at a lot of other examples of how they've done it. I do want to, however, make one comment, and that is... I get a little scared when I hear people talking about competition, because when you are actually talking about competing services, we can take a look very clearly at the federal models for it. And all too many times people in government talk about trying to compete services from the public sector into the private sector, and they seldom, if ever, capture all the costs that are attendant to it and the social costs that hit down the line 10 or 15 years later have a social impact that end up costing more in the long run. But it sure looks good at the very beginning. So I'd like to know,
sure,
with Mr. Croft, how does he intend to manage competitive bidding?
Well, Dan was talking about the privatization proposals, but I, on the two issues that you talked about, we have done that. We did the bed tax, increasing the bed tax to get the new convention center. So that model has been used here and can be used for specific projects. I think people are probably more likely to do those things for limited amounts of times for specific results. And, I was one of the early whistleblowers on the private prison corruption that then led the investigation of a lot of the oil corruption down in Juneau. And it's because that private prison proposal, though it was talked about in competitive terms, was never truly competitive. It was the same people bringing the same project with the same special interests behind it. And they did the same things. They were going to get us into a contract and then change order us up, and that's the risk of what we're talking about. It can seem like saving money on the front end, but often it loses you on the back end, and it's a recipe for the kind of corruption that we have hopefully can avoid in the future, and the major scale of it that we have avoided. But I don't want to end up like a lot of those places that have that level. I think we've cleaned up what we got, and part of it was that privatization of the prisons.
Okay, thanks for calling, Victor. And we're going to go to Soren. Soren, line 5. I think he's changing the direction here a little bit. Soren, are you there?
Yes, hello, can you hear me?
Yes, I can. What's your question?
Yes, in light of today being Earth Day, happy Earth Day.
Okay.
In light of the
Earth Day to you, Soren.
In light of the severe crisis it portends, how are you, and this is to both of you, plan on addressing the effects of global warming? And I mean not just recycling, but I mean major structural changes that we really need to start thinking about making. Alaska's, of course, warming at a faster rate. And I guess first, you know, do both of you believe that global warming is actually happening? And then secondly, do you believe it's human caused? And then third, you know, what are we going to do about it?
Wow.
Great question.
Go ahead, Eric.
I'll do whatever. Yeah, I'm not sure who wants to respond, but happy Earth Day, Soren. And I think we can become a world leader in alternative energy, and was a big sponsor of the Fire Island Wind Farm, big proponent of it in the legislature, and glad it's very close to becoming a reality. A great thing to pair that off with is some of the new generation of hydro that has a lot of the fewer impacts. So when you do high hydro in the more modern way, you don't have the effect on the fisheries, and you have a much better power generation. And those two work well off with each other. When the wind isn't blowing, you can take a little more off. You know, I can't see Russia from my house, but I can see a volcano, and I can see great tides. Uh-huh. And I think that's the next generation after we go on those two easier ones. So I want people flying in to Anchorage to look down and see a city that's powering itself on its natural environment. And that saves all the things you're talking about. Yes, I think we're facing the effects of global warming. I think it's real. And I think human factors are a significant contribution. And we can be a leader in this state, just as we're going to unfortunately be a leader in the impacts of it. We should be a leader in finding alternative ways out.
Dan, you got something to say on global warming?
Absolutely. I thought the operative term now was climate change, because a very respected group of Russian scientists have come forth saying that the Earth is actually in a cooling phase. And so we might be in the last throes of warming as we see in the Arctic, but again, some of the top scientists and other international communities are saying that climate change is probably a more appropriate term, because they're seeing a trend towards cooling now. So bottom line is, though, what can we do within the city of Anchorage to maybe do things more efficiently, put a smaller footprint out there as possibly can? You know, one of the things I've been working on is, I serve on the Alaska Natural Gas Development Authority Board of Directors and have for 6 years. We've been working diligently to make sure that as Cook Inlet natural gas runs out, that we find an alternative supply. And it looks like, you know, the best source is going to be from the North Slope, potentially off a big pipeline that comes down through and then heads down the highway route to Canada. And a spur line off that would bring enough natural gas to this area literally to power us for hundreds of years. And we could do really innovative things. What if Anchorage was the first city with all natural gas automobiles? Eliminate the gasoline engine in Anchorage. And we have it in municipal vehicles now. We have natural gas-powered vehicles in part of our fleet. They work very well, very efficiently. We could be a leader in that. We can also do things just within the context of Title 21 and our 2020 plan. Make sure that we design buildings so that they don't block the sun, that you create a good sunscape when you're going downtown with high-rise buildings. Make sure that new developments in Anchorage are eco-friendly, and that you've got good south-facing windows, and that you take advantage of the climate we live in, and make sure that you're capturing, wherever possible, good Arctic design with good insulation, and again, the way you site on a property to make sure you take advantage of sun and wind and other opportunities. So, you know, the city of Anchorage can be a leader in that regard, and I think, as Eric mentioned as well, we've got hydro potential, we've got wind potential, we've got geothermal not too far away. You know, how many cities would be as envious as we are, you know, envious of us because we've got so many opportunities, so much energy resource, but what we don't have a plan. And that's going to be one of the four prime pillars of my platform, is that we need a long-term energy plan for Anchorage if we're going to progress as a city.
Right. So we've only got a few more minutes left. Thanks, Dan. We've only got a few more minutes left, and I'd like to get in a couple more callers. We still want to go through schools, crime, and the myriad of other things that a mayor faces.
We'll solve them in 2 minutes. No problem.
We sure will. Let's go to line 10, David. David, are you there?
Yes.
Oh, hi. What's your question?
Maybe a slanted view. There were some disparaging comments about prosecutors by Dan Sullivan. I was wondering if we should, he feels like we should eliminate prosecutors, or hey, maybe we could privatize them. And I'll listen to the call there. Go ahead. Thank you.
I'm not aware of the comments he's referring to, but eliminate prosecutors? Come on. You got a serious question?
He's off the air.
It's off the air. We have one more, and poor Mark has been holding forever. Go ahead, Mark.
Hi. I have a quick question for Dan. I promise it'll be serious. I remember this morning on NPR, I heard that you had respectfully declined to take part in a public forum this afternoon. And I remember at the time it struck me as not a very respectful thing to do for the, you know, pre-election voting public. And I'd just like to ask Dan, why the sudden mind change here, and why did you call into the program?
Can I just jump in here, Mark? First of all, I wrote that promo. I put in the word respectfully. I meant it that way. We had juggled and juggled and juggled through the various aides for Mr. Croft and Mr. Sullivan a time, you know, when they could both make it. And then as it worked out, I talked to Dan again, and we figured out how he could literally be on the program while he was going from one appointment to another, and it worked out fine. So, Dan, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I wasn't able to call in until about 20 after, because I finished up my 2 o'clock meeting about 10 after, and by the time I got in the car, I'm actually pulled over in front of my next meeting right now so that I didn't drive and talk any more than I had to. But, again, you know, that's just a silly question. We've got important issues in front of us in this city, and I think all of Eric's callers have now gotten their calls in.
Okay, well, thanks, Mark, for calling in. Now I know the power of the promo, as we say in radio.
The power of the promo.
Thanks. Well, we have a little bit of time. How about crime? Who would like to answer that? The report out yesterday, this is an email question. The Uniform Crime Report was issued this week. Violent crime has increased in Anchorage, but overall, the crime rate is down. Either of you candidates have a chance to look at it, and would you make changes with the APD?
Yeah, I'll comment on that. Okay. You know, the Uniform Crime Report reflects what has been a trend for the last 5 or 6 years, and that is the unacceptable growth in violent crime. You've got aggravated assaults up over a 6-year period, over 60% increase in that period. Simple assaults up 50-some percent. Robbery, which is taken by force or threat of force, up 59% over that period. It's unacceptable. I'm glad that the overall crime rate is down, but I think what people are most worried about in their community is violent crime. That's the one that affects you in a life-changing moment. So we need to do a better job, and I've said during the campaign there's a couple things you can do that are immediately effective that other cities that have lowered their crime rate have done effectively. Chicago, for example, the chief of police in Chicago, he said, we put our cops where the crime is. That's how we reduced our crime rate. We need to do a better job of that in Anchorage. We have more area-wide policing. We need to be more specific with our policing. And we need to do a better job with the state. The state judicial system is a little bit dysfunctional now. They don't process, they don't prosecute in a timely manner. We need more help from the state as well.
Okay, sorry, Dan, we got to run. We're out of time. Dan Sullivan, Eric Croft, thank you so much. And they will both be on Running May 30th.
We'll talk more about crime then. Thanks.
Community Forum is a production of KSKA's News and Public Affairs Department. Opinions expressed are those of the guest, host, and callers, and do not represent the views of KSKA, the licensee, or the underwriters. You can subscribe to free podcasts of Community Forum on our website at kska.org, where you can also find links to additional information on today's topic, including all the websites mentioned on today's show. If you have questions or comments concerning this program, write to us at 3877 University Drive, Anchorage, Alaska, 99508, or email communityforum@kska.org. CD copies can be purchased by calling 550-8400 during regular business hours. This is KSKA, Anchorage.